Hello there, my name is John Caruso, and welcome to a fresh episode of our podcast, Everyone Has a Story. This is the podcast that complements our two quarterly lifestyle magazines, Hello Sunshine Magazine and In Noosa Magazine. Our team are currently busy working on the spring issue of both of those publications, and they will be out early September. Now, if you would like to be like hundreds and hundreds of other brands and businesses that have been part of our Hello Sunshine and In Noosa family, reach out to our client service manager. You can contact us via Facebook and on Instagram. Now to today's fresh episode of Everyone Has a Story. Mark Forbes is the father of two girls who suffer from eating disorders. Now, Mark founded End Ed with the goal of giving hope to those suffering from an eating disorder by creating an alternative to the medical model. The first residential eating disorder facility has opened, and it's here on the Sunshine Coast. Everyone has a story, and today I'd like you to meet Mark Forbes.
End Ed obviously stands for End Eating Disorders, but there's a deeper connotation to that, and that is when we had our youngest daughter at a psychologist, she drew a big stick figure on the board and a little one on the inside and said to our daughter, which one are you? She said, well, I'm the big one. Eating disorder's the little one. Psychologist said, no, it's the other way around. The big one is the eating disorder and little one is you. And we did need to turn that around. But mum and dad, we're going to give this big fella a name. We're going to call him Ed, because when Ed is in charge, your child is no longer there. And it's totally relatable, because when an eating disorder is in charge of your child, the eyes change, the facial expressions change. It is really a possession. So stepping back then, how did we start End Ed? Well, we have two daughters with eating disorders. They're not related. Between my wife and I, we have five children. So one is from my wife's first marriage and my eldest is from mine. So they're not related by blood, but it was the universe delivering us two lots of eating disorders, I think, to say, get off your butt and do something about this. So 6.5 years ago, we opened up our house at Bedina to parents and carers who were going through the same journey, because we found out a frustration, the lack of support and care and understanding of eating disorders in Australia was rife and it needed changing. So that's how we started End Ed. It was just a collective of mum and dads and carers coming together to talk about their experiences, their frustration.
How were you first aware that there was an issue with the girls in your family when it came to the eating disorder? What were the signs?
Yeah, with my eldest, she's now 41, so she was 16 when it first took hold with her. And at that stage, I had no concept of what an eating disorder was. I just heard, unfortunately, with bulimia, they'll eat quite a lot, but then get rid of it after meals. So you heard a lot of that sort of purging noises and that style of thing happening. But again, it didn't ring the alarm bells it should have to us, managing what they eat.
When you went along to the psychologist for the first time, what was kind of the catalyst for this? And I imagine there's numerous things that set these disorders off, but just to give an example again, to try and make it clear for parents and friends and to have an understanding of how these things start.
Yeah, well, look, we've found out through our journey that there's a genetic base to it. We had our youngest tested genetically, and she was born with the MTHFR gene. And that's reasonably common, but if you have a double helix of it, which our daughter has, then the body does not process folate like the average person would. So if your body doesn't process folate from your foods, then you do not get the serotonin in the gut, the feel-good drug, of not enough of it. So then you slip into anxiety, depression. Then, unfortunately, that can quite easily lead to eating disorders. The first thing we say to parents when they ring us up is, and they tell us their journey and they feel guilt and shame, we just go, look, we'll tell you the story. And once you understand there's a genetic composition to this, it'll stop you kicking yourself as to trying to understand what you've done wrong or how you've triggered it. So if you're born genetically predisposed, there's some trauma in that life of that person that triggers it into action. Now, the interesting thing is, what's the definition of trauma? The average person would go trauma would be something severe. But to a person with high anxiety and depression, trauma can be getting kicked off the popular list at school. When you're number 10 on the Facebook list and now you're kicked off that list, that's trauma to that person who is already suffering from anxiety and depression. So we've journeyed this path so long now, it's quite easy to see the signs. And for instance, in summer, if a person was wearing a jumper in summer, why? Well, they're hiding their body shape. And with anorexia, the body starts to develop fine hair on the skin. Why does it do that? Because the body goes into survival mode. Core temperature drops through anorexia because they're not getting enough sustenance through their diet. So core temperature drops, fine body hair starts to develop to keep the body warm. It's an interesting process. I mean, that's the complexity of the human body.
Yeah. Tell us about what you've got set up now in terms of opening your home first up to people with eating disorders. And I imagine predominantly when we talk about this subject, we concentrate on women, but it would happen to males as well, I'm guessing. Is that correct, but not as well known?
Oh, totally. 70% would be female, 30% male. And the ages, even since we've been starting, unfortunately, we've seen the age get younger and younger, whereas families are ringing us with seven-year-old boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do, even in the short period of time we've been going, like 6.5 years, we've seen the age group get younger and younger. Seven-year-old boys, seven-year-old girls. Why families are noticing is, all of a sudden, say a family rang up a few weeks back with a seven-year-old boy, and they said, we're concerned because all of a sudden his diet has changed. I'm not eating this, not eating that. I want to be, I'm choosing to be a vegetarian at the age of seven, and I just want to focus on getting a six-pack stomach.
Mm.
Now, why does that happen? It can only be social media. And what this seven-year-old boy is processing, what it takes to be successful and popular. There's so many examples of what we do in our journey. The people that come to us, you know, the other week, a 26-year-old male came to me and said, I want to tell you my story.
Hmm.
And he said, here's a photo of me at school, age 13. Skinny kid, pimply-faced. He said, I didn't know where I fitted in. You know, I wasn't scholastic inclined. I wasn't sporting inclined. I felt like I was nowhere. And I blamed it on my body. So I spent the next 6 years of my life controlling my food intake, transforming my body into something I thought would be more acceptable. And then he showed me a photo of what he ended up.
Hmm.
And he had a 12-pack stomach and an amazing sculptured body.
Yeah.
But he said to me, that's me at my worst mental state right there.
Yeah.
Because it dawned on me that achieving that body was not the answer. It was deeper than that. It's very interesting.
What's the general path for parents and friends of people with eating disorders? Who do they turn to? We'll get on to what you've got set up there in a minute, Mark, but do they go to their GP? Do they go to a psychologist? What's the first step?
Yeah, look, generally, and the more and more well-known our charity gets, we're quite often becoming the first port of call, and we'll get 6 or 7 new families every day looking for help. And we get GPs and psychologists and nutritionalists ringing us saying, listen, I've got this client that I've been treating for so many years. I didn't know that there's an eating disorder underlying this and it's not my field of expertise. Can we refer them to you for support? And it's great that we're working together like that now. It's taken a long time to get to that space. But, you know, a GP will tell you that eating disorders take up 1% of their education process on the way of becoming a doctor. So generally the person sitting in front of them, whether it's mum or dad and the person with the eating disorder or just the person with the eating disorder, knows a hell of a lot more about the eating disorder than the GP will. And that's not a fault of the GPs. It's just it only takes up 1% of their training. And what generally happens too, which is the frustrating part, is that because they're not aware of the language that someone with an eating disorder uses. And these are generally very, very highly intelligent, successful people in their own right. And they study eating disorders and they know the language to use. To have that GP or that psychologist scratching their head going, you know what, Mum and Dad, I think you're the ones that have got the problem here, not your child. And that's happened time and time again. Parents tell us these stories and we've experienced it ourselves, where you seriously just want to punch that person in the nose because they've just given life to that eating disorder because the eating disorder's then gone, now we know we're starting division. Yeah. We're starting division between the GP and my parents. And that's a good thing.
Tell me about
and that's how the eating disorder looks at it.
I understand. Tell me about the support that you offer at your charity at End Ed.
When we saw that Australia did not have a residential model, we looked to the States and found that they'd been doing residential facilities for the last 28 years and specifically for eating disorders and had 50 to 60 centres throughout the States, and yet Australia did not have one. So I've been in business all my life, and to me there's always you either jump in boots and all or you stay at home. So we then went from, okay, there's not one in Australia. I started driving around the Sunshine Coast because to me this was the place to have it because of the community and the population size, and went to 15 properties. None of them ticked the box until I drove down that property at Mooloola Valley where that residential is now built. I didn't get out of the car. I just knew this is the property. So I went back with my wife. We met the owners and they said, yeah, we want $1.3 million. We didn't have any money. And I said, well, can we get a six-month settlement? I didn't tell them we didn't have any money. And then we went and put our house on the market. My wife still reminds me of losing our special home at Padina. That's how committed we were to make this happen. So we signed that contract. We put our house on the market. It sold reasonably quickly. But in the meantime, Roy and Nola Thompson, local philanthropists, we heard of their story where they'd lost a niece to anorexia suicide. And we approached them with what we were doing. And long story short, Roy said, come around to our house. This was a Thursday. Come around Monday. We'll write you a check. Went round, no paperwork needed, no contract needed, nothing. He just wrote us a check for $1 million and said, go and buy that land, which we did. But we'd already sold our house, so we were sort of a bit nomadic then. But then that was fine. We got the property, but we needed to raise $3 million to actually build the residential, which ended up being the 13-bedroom home. And it was just designed like a big Queenslander. So we went to Blackburn Architects and sat with them and they said, we'll take this on for free. And every consultant we went to said, we're going to back this and we won't charge you anything. So all the consultants' fee for the whole project, zero.
Yeah, great.
Which was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And then we got on to Andrew Wallace through that journey, our local MP, who told us his own journey in his own family with eating disorders. He then started coming to our meetings, became a patron of our charity. I went to Canberra with him on a number of occasions. I got in front of Scott Morrison, Malcolm Turnbull, Greg Hunt, every politician, and I seriously crash tackled. They didn't escape. So they ended up committing $2 million to help build the facility, but we're still a mil short. So BA Murphy's come on board, and BA Murphy's said we'll do this at cost only, no profit whatsoever.
Right.
And then we rounded up 40 other companies on the coast, from painters to electricians to plumbers, who all jumped in. My brother, his engineering company, did the steelwork. My son-in-law did the flooring. So it was a beautiful connection, family, community development.
Yeah.
And we finished that last August. So
the properties,
we did that in,
properties complete, Mark?
Yes, we finished building that last August. And the Butterfly Foundation have now come in to be the operators of that facility. And they've just opened the doors. We had the official opening last Tuesday.
Oh, great.
So those doors are now open.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, being the first one in Australia, the 630-plus families have filled out an expression of interest to be in that residential.
Yeah, right.
Which is very sad, considering it's a 13-bed facility.
Wow. And
so,
What kind of – how is the property staffed and what kind of support and assistance, if any, do you get from government? Like, how's it funded?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting thing as well. And this is now up to the Butterfly Foundation. But the federal government, through Andrew Wallace, in our initial drive to the government, also committed $4 million to Butterfly to help run it. So the federal government has been fantastic. State government, unfortunately, have not given $1 to any of this at all, even though I've sat with, I think it was Cameron Dick was the health minister at the time when we first started, and then Stephen Miles a number of times. We never got a dollar from them. So federal government's been great. Council's been great. Council, give us, they had to actually create a new code because we went to them and said, this is rural land, this is what we want to do. And they said, well, we haven't got a code for that. I said, well, it's never been done before, that's why. So the town planning section of council were brilliant. They sat down and drafted a new code. So
yeah,
just so we could make this happen, which was brilliant. And then give us an exemption on rates. And so council's been great, community's been great, and federal government's been great.
That's interesting about state government, though. You would think even if it falls under allocation of funds, considering that state runs health, allocation of funds for mental well-being, that there's not a dollar in it for something like this.
Look, it's a very sore point with us because we can't understand it. You know, we work full-time voluntary in our charity, so we've devoted a lot of time and energy and effort, and so have a lot of the community. To have the shut door from state government is hard to get your head around.
Yeah.
I remember the first meeting I had with Stephen Miles. He brought in his advisors, and what the question was, okay, what's the model of care? And we went, okay, it's got a medical base, but also very holistic. We've got equine therapy, we've got plant therapy, we've got all these different modalities, and you could see the shutters coming down away. And I thought, well, I might as well walk out now because it obviously doesn't tick the hospital medical box that you guys are used to.
Yeah.
So I felt straight away I was wasting my time because it's something different.
Yeah.
That they couldn't accept. And I suppose I didn't want to be part of something that was the first of its kind in Australia.
Yeah.
I wanted to see it working before they commit.
You know? So let me get this straight. It's a 13-bed property, and you said you had interest of over 600? Is that right? Or more than 600 trying to apply cases?
3 weeks ago, there was expressions of interest for over 630 families.
Yeah.
Now that would be probably the way it grows. That's probably 660.
Wow.
The way it grows, yeah. And we just had Minister David Coleman, who's the minister that advises Scott Morrison and the Minister for Mental Health and Suicide Prevention. He was up here last Tuesday to officiate the opening of the residential at Mooloola. But luckily we got him out to our next project we haven't mentioned yet is the Undead House of Hope at Woombye. And we got him out there for an hour to showing what we do there and then went to the residential for the opening and then took him to our next project, which is the Undead Espresso Bar at Bedina.
Yeah.
Now, because it was a private lunch, I sort of organised the guest list. So I rang around families that we have supported in around Australia who are well-connected and desperate for change. People flew up from Adelaide, come up from Ballina, Tweed, Brisbane, to be here and sit in front of the minister to go, we need more of this everywhere throughout Australia.
Yeah, great. I know
it was a good opportunity.
Yeah, I know cases would be very individualised, but on average, how long would someone stay at the property, Mark?
Based on what we've seen in the States, it'd be 60 to 90 days would be the stay, the average stay. So this is why you need to have a lot more because it's a fairly lengthy time. And when it's only 13 beds, you're not turning over big numbers of people throughout the year like is required. So these centres are desperate, not only in each state, but a couple in each state now.
So what's next? How are you getting the ball rolling?
Well, yeah, when we finished building the residential at Mooloola, we sat on the operating board with Butterfly Foundation. But then I could see that, look, you know, we're better off using our energy and our vision to further, instead of just sitting on that board and getting caught up in ramifications of operating it, we're better off moving on. So we then bought another property at West Woombye, and it's an 8-bedroom home on 2.7 acres.
Yeah.
We currently live there as we transform it into what it needs to be. But it is the NDED House of Hope, and it's owned by our charity, NDED. Purely ours, nothing to do with Butterfly. So purpose of that is we always felt a transitional home would be required. So if people do the residential model, some will need transitioning back to community. So you need a different space for that.
Yeah.
But this already has, we run 3 support groups a week out of that House of Hope at Woombye. So once we've finished establishing it and move out, it will then become also a part residential as well as support groups. So support groups will then run 5 days a week out of there, and we'll be able to accommodate a couple of families there who say want to move up from Adelaide and be a part of the support group network. So what we're finding with this space already is that it's a preventative space as well, because already some of the people we're supporting are showing signs of improvement that much that they won't need to go to the residential. So it becomes, the NDED House of Hope becomes a preventative space as well as a support space,
yeah,
and a transitional space when required. So also at the property, it's on 2.7 acres. We're turning that 2.7 acres into a peaceful park. We've already started that process, but we need funding to complete it. But it is, it'll have a waterfall, ponds, streams, yoga platforms, veggie gardens, herb gardens, outdoor dining. It'll be just a beautiful community space that people can use then. And we've already said to other community groups that we work with, listen, when we're not using it, we can open up that space to support other mental health communities that would benefit from using that space in an afternoon, for instance, and running yoga there and just mental health retreat type area.
What's your online presence like if people want to reach out to you? Website, web address, social media platforms?
Yeah, and nz.org.au is our website. We're also on Facebook and Instagram. And then what we haven't mentioned just quickly either is the NDED Espresso Bar, which is down at Bedina, 5 Bemagui Crescent, Bedina. That is any money that hopefully will eventually make the profit there, a little go back to the charity. And we provide work experience then for people that we've supported through their journey. So our baristas and everybody that works there, we've supported through their journey, and they're now well enough to come back to the workspace. So it's a great community connector space as well. So we get a lot of people, different. We had Nambour Community Connection Group yesterday. So we're working together with a lot of different communities to cross over and support. So it's a great space. So come on down to the NDED Espresso Bar if you want to know more about it as well.
Mark Forbes from NDED was my guest on today's episode of Everyone Has a Story. And if you think there's somebody that might get something out of this podcast, please send it to them, share it with them, share it about on your social media networks. And again, I'd like to remind you that this podcast complements the 2 quarterly lifestyle magazines, Hello Sunshine and In Noosa Magazine. Team are currently busy working on the spring issues. Both of those magazines will be out, or the spring issues of both of those magazines will be out in early September. And if you would like your brand to be part of those publications, reach out to us on Facebook and on Instagram. Until next time, take care.